Hi, as I just said, I'm Rhiannon Morrissey from Salve Regina, and I'm happy to present to you today my project on capitalizing on the benefits of berries as a treatment for gastric cancer. So it's universal knowledge that berries are healthy for us, but what's not universal knowledge is why they're healthy for us and how they're healthy for us. So what our lab aims is to investigate if these berries can be used for treating cancer. Currently, gastric cancer is the fifth most common cancer in the world, and currently the standard treatment method is chemotherapy, which is effective to some degree in killing the cancer, but it also inflicts negative side effects on the patient, be it pain, hair loss, appetite loss, etc. So natural remedies are a new way to kill the cancer without also inflicting the negative side effects on the patient. And a molecule that we look into as a natural remedy is called gallic acid. So gallic acid is a secondary metabolite found most potently in blackberries, strawberries, raspberries, and other berries. It's produced by an enzyme called shikimate dehydrogenase as an offshoot of the shikimate pathway. And it also induces different effects in different types of cells. In plant cells, it induces rapid cell proliferation, whereas in cancer cells, it induces cell cycle arrest. So the research questions I aim to investigate are, does gallic acid induce cell cycle arrest in gastric cancer cells? Which phase of the cell cycle is most affected by gallic acid treatment? And what are the genetic mechanisms underlying the arrest? So I culture two different types of gastric cancer cell lines at Salve. There's AGS and MKN28, which are both available commercially through the American Type Culture Collection. But they're different in their morphologies. AGS, seen on the top right, is poorly differentiated, so it doesn't try to look like the cells of the organ it inhabits, which makes it very easy for the AGS cells to spread from one organ to another. MKN, on the other hand, really tries to look like the organ that it inhabits, so it tends to stay localized in one organ. So the methods of the experiment. The first step of the experiment involves culturing both cancer cell lines at 37 degrees Celsius and 5% CO2 in standard culture conditions until about 80% confluence, as seen in the picture above. At about 80% confluence, they're transferred into a six-well plate for the differential dosage part of the experiment. And in the six-well plate, they receive a 48-hour serum starve to sink all the cells in the G1 phase, at which point they're treated for 48 hours with gallic acid, and they're harvested at differential time points between 0 and 48 hours post-gallic acid treatment. After harvest, different portions of the cells are put through two experiments, flow cytometry and qPCR, which I'll get into now. Flow cytometry is a cell cycle analysis technique that investigates which portion of the cell cycle, which phase is most affected by the gallic acid treatment, and which phase is arrested by treatment. So we have two biological replicates for each treatment that we put through our experiments, and this is some of the data that we receive. So the scatter plot seen on the left side of the screen shows all of the cells in our population, and we've chosen to hone in on the red circled region, which is also seen in the blue histogram on the right side. So knowing a little bit about the amount of DNA in the different phases of the cell cycle enabled us to gate the histogram for which peaks corresponded to which phases of the cell cycle. The tallest peak, closest to the origin, corresponds to the G1 phase of the cell cycle. The dip between the two peaks corresponds to the synthesis phase, and the smaller peak, closer to the right side of the graph, corresponds to the G2 peak. It shifted over in its fluorescent absorbance twice the amount of the G1 peak because, as we remember from general biology, cells in the G2 phase of the cell cycle have twice the amount of DNA as cells in the G1 phase. So what does gene expression tell us? qPCR compares the expression of certain genes of interest in comparison to a control gene to examine how gallic acid treatment affects the expression of our genes, and it gives an idea of which pathways in the cell cycle are involved in the response to gallic acid treatment. So what do our results from qPCR tell us? On the left, we have a melt curve, and on the right, we have an amplification curve. We can see from the melt curve that there are two distinct peaks on the graph. The peak to the left represents the control gene, and the peak to the right represents the gene of interest. As we can see, both clusters of peaks are very clean, which indicates to us that the same sequence is being amplified in both clusters of peaks. On the right, we have our amplification curve. After it reaches the threshold level of zero, we can see that the cyber green dye is being detected as it intercalates into the DNA, and this amplification curve corresponds to the concentration of our gene of interest as it's being amplified. So now that we've gone through our raw data, what have we analyzed from this data and what results can we glean? We'll jump right into that. So for flow cytometry, here we have an example slide of our AGF cell line where it's being untreated with gallic acid. So it's replicating as it normally would in a human being. So we have a few points of interest on this graph. On the X, we have the hours. On the Y, we have the average cell counts, the percentages in each phase of the cell cycle. And then we have three distinct lines. The light purple represents the G1 phase of the cell cycle. The black line represents the S phase. And the dark purple represents the G2 phase of the cell cycle. So we can see that at 0 hours, when the cells have just been initiated into culture, the highest point on the line is from the G1 phase of the cell cycle. Then, at 12 hours, at half of the doubling time, which is normally 24 hours in AGF cells, we see that we have an increase in the black line for the S phase as the DNA is being replicated. Then at 24 hours, again, the normal doubling time of the AGF, we see that we have an increase in the G2 population. So they're continuing right through the cell cycle. So now that we know how they behave when they're untreated, how do they behave when they're treated with gallic acid? This is the same AGF cell line as it's been treated with gallic acid. Again, on the x-axis, we have the hours post-treatment, and on the y-axis, we have the percent of average cell counts in each phase of the cell cycle. The lightest blue line represents untreated cells. The dark blue line represents 20 micromolar gallic acid-treated cells, and the black line represents 100 micromolar treated gallic acid cells. The leftmost graph represents all the cells in the G1 phase. The middlemost graph represents the cells in the S phase, and the rightmost graph represents cells in the G2 phase of the cell cycle. So there's a lot of information on this graph, but what are the important points that we need to glean from it? At 24 hours, the normal doubling time of AGS, we can see that there's an increase in the G1 population in the 100 micromolar dose, indicating that this dose is halting all of the cells in the G1 phase of the cell cycle. At 24 hours, we can also see that in the 20 micromolar dark blue line, we have an increase in the amount of cells in the S phase, indicating that this is where the lower dose is halting the cells in their proliferation. And finally, at that same 24-hour time point, we can see that the black 100 micromolar dosage is decreased in the G2 population, indicating that after it stops the cells in the G1 phase of the cell cycle, it does not allow them to proliferate on into the G2 phase of the cell cycle. So this is where arrest is being effectuated. So we also have our MKN28 line. On the X, again, is the hours post-treatment, and on the Y-axis, we have the percent of cells in each phase of the cell cycle. The blue line represents the untreated baseline sample, and the green line represents the cells that have been treated with 100 micromolar gallic acid. So MKN has a different doubling time than AGS, typically about 37 hours if left untreated. We can see that at 12 hours post-treatment, we have a decreased amount of cells in the S phase, in the G1 phase in the 100 micromolar concentration. We also see that at 24 hours, we have an increased amount of cells in the S phase comparing the 100 micromolar dosage to baseline, indicating that the 100 micromolar dose effectuates the cell cycle arrest in that S phase of the cell cycle. So we also conducted qPCR. What can we glean from qPCR? This is a catalog of all the genes that were included in the study. We have RPL29, which is our control gene. We have MMP9, which is involved in angiogenesis to a cancerous tumor. We have BAX and BCL2, which work together to bring about apoptosis. We have P21, CDK4, and cyclin D1, which work together to bring about cell cycle arrest. And we've also denoted the expected expression patterns as they change in regards to gallic acid treatment. So this is our AGS line at 24 hours post-treatment through the different treatment doses that we gave, notably untreated, 20 micromolar, and 100 micromolar treatments. So the most notable thing to glean from this graph is that the gene CDK4, which is the rightmost gene on the graph, has a trend towards upregulation in the 100 micromolar dose in green compared to the baseline dose in the purple. So we zoomed in on that 100 micromolar dose because that was producing the most important results. So this is that constant dose over time. On the x-axis, we have the different genes in our experiment, and on the y-axis, we have the expression fold change values, and each of the different bars corresponds to the hours post-treatment. So the important things to glean from this graph are that in the genes MMP9, P21, cyclin D1, and Rho B, there's a strong trend towards increase in expression fold change over time after treatment with gallic acid. So in our MKN28 line, at 24 hours post-treatment, we treated with 100 micromolar gallic acid. And the important thing to notice in this graph is that between the dosages of 10 to 20 micromolar gallic acid, we can see each of the genes being upregulated, indicating that each of their individual pathways is being invoked at those dosages. So what conclusions can we draw from this? For AGS through flow cytometry, we found that in the 100 micromolar dose, G1 arrest is being effectuated at 24 hours, whereas at that same time point, 20 micromolar gallic acid is effectuating S-phase arrest. In MKN28, the 100 micromolar dose is effectuating S-phase arrest also at 24 hours, and we're currently analyzing the results from our 20 micromolar dose experiment. For qPCR, at 24 hours in AGS, we noticed a strong trend towards upregulation for CDK4 in the 100 micromolar dose, and potential trends towards increase in P21, BCL2, and CDK6 in that same dose. At 48 hours in the 100 micromolar dose, we also noticed a strong trend towards upregulation in the genes P21, cyclin D, and Rho B, and we're collecting the 20 micromolar data and expecting a potential downregulation in the expression of the genes. At 24 hours in MKN28, we noticed that all pathways were invoked in the range of 10 to 20 micromolar dosages of gallic acid, and we've completed a time series experiment, but we're currently analyzing the results. So what we found through this whole presentation is that gallic acid affects different cancer cell lines in different ways and through different pathways, depending on the dosage of gallic acid given. So our research questions. We found that, yes, gallic acid does induce cell cycle arrest in gastric cancer. We also found that depending on the dosage and the specific cell line, there is a specific phase of the cell cycle that's most affected by the gallic acid treatment, either G1 or S. And we also found that depending on the dose and the cell line, there are different genetic mechanisms underlying the cell cycle arrest. So our current and future directions are a genomics approach with affymetrix arrays and primary cancer cell exposure to gallic acid. On the top right, you'll see healthy epithelial cells that were extracted from a patient, and they're unaffected by treatment with gallic acid. Gallic acid is selectively cytotoxic, which is beneficial to give to a patient because it won't wipe out their healthy cell populations. And on the bottom of this slide, we see a depiction of the GI tract, and we see a healthy epithelial cell population about to be extracted from a patient by our colleague, Dr. Moss, and our collaborator at Rhode Island Hospital. So the significance of this project is that gallic acid, and by extension eating berries, could serve as a candidate for a natural replacement to chemotherapy in treating cancer. Is this practical? So it's suggested that in one berry, the amount of gallic acid is about 240 times the dosage that I investigated in this experiment. So eating a few berries could potentially prevent or cure cancer. So there may be some truth to the fact that a berry a day could keep the doctor away. I'd like to acknowledge my PI, Dr. Swanson, my colleagues in the Swanson Lab, Xavier University, and Rhode Island INRI for the funding for this project. Any questions?
Yep. I just wondered, 20 micromolar and 100 micromolar is very high for any single compound if you're talking about you're getting it out of ingested material. So I just wonder, is it known raspberries, and I'm sure from berry to berry there are differences. What is the expected post-digestion?
So about 30% of the gallic acid that you consume is absorbed and excreted in the urine, so that is a large amount of it. So I think I've seen in the literature that about a quarter of the berry is enough for the dosage.
Okay, and the gallic acid has no sugar side chains or anything? Because quite often
compounds,
because normally they're in, like, in a mixture. You know, obviously when you eat berries, you're not eating them, pure compounds.
Yeah, we have looked at lower dosages. We're doing fine dose experiments now, and we're looking into that direction in the future to optimize the dosage levels that would be available to a patient. Anything else? Thank you.